I think I'm losing my backup singers. This isn't good. Thank you, First Unity Choir. Well, the other night, after one of our events, I'm not even sure I remember which one, a woman came up to me and said, well, this is an interesting place. She said, what do you all teach? So, yes, in a five-second summary, right? So I quickly reviewed the five principles, and then I mentioned something about metaphysical spirituality. And she said to me, metaphysics. I think I've heard of that, but I don't have a clue what it means. And so it just planted a little seed in my mind that maybe it's time for all of us to sort of revisit some of those spiritual truths and really dig deeply into what is metaphysics and how does it affect our teachings. And it seems a perfect time to do so, not only Memorial Day when we honor those who have died for our freedoms, but also the beginning of summer, the unofficial beginning of summer, right? When the days are longer, it's lighter, we see abundant growth every place we look. It seems a good time for us to claim our spiritual growth and our spiritual freedom. So we're going to begin today with this little series based on metaphysical truths. And we are mainly going to use Reverend Dr. Paul Hesselbach's book, Heart-Centered Metaphysics, and along with his workbook. Ann and I, and probably Hope, have had Paul for classes, and he's an amazing theologian. And so we're going to use his work, as well as some other New Thought leaders we're going to throw in as we go along. So what I said to the woman who asked me about metaphysics was that it's actually a branch of philosophy that studies the ultimate reality beyond the physical realm. So it's made up of two words, meta, that means beyond, and physics, which stands for the physical world. Our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, in The Revealing Word, defines metaphysics as the systematic study of being, that which transcends the physical. So what it boils down to is we recognize and we realize that what we see, touch, and hear with our human senses is not all there is. There's more. There's much more. Now, to be clear, we don't deny the physical world. Some branches of philosophical metaphysics do. We don't deny that the physical world exists. We honor it, and we know there is always a greater reality. So in Unity, we believe that God as spirit is the invisible life and intelligence underlying all physicality. Do you all remember we studied this story not too long ago, Jesus' encounter with the Samaritan woman at the well? She had been taught in her culture that God lived in that temple in Jerusalem, and she, as a Samaritan woman, was not allowed to go there. And what did Jesus say to her? He said to her, God is spirit, and those who worship must worship in spirit and in truth. Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, our co-founders, call themselves and everybody who came for classes, students of truth. That's what they were called. And in Unity, we discern those truths in the outer and in the inner. We honor those truths of inner beingness of every human being, regardless of time, place, or circumstance. I remember when I was teaching middle school language arts, I was lucky to have one of the children's favorite authors to come visit us one day, and she spent the day with us. And in one of the Q&A sessions, one of my students, a middle school student, raised his hand, and he said, Mrs. Grove, I want you to settle an argument for us. We've been fighting about this. This one scene in our favorite book, we need to know this. Is it real? Did it really happen? And she looked at him for a while and she said, well, young man, that is a really good question. She said, I would have to say it may not have happened, but it's still true. And I love that. That has stayed with me forever. So we in Unity see two different kinds of truths. We see different kinds of truths also. Knowing that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, we recognize two types of truths. One we call relative, and the other we call absolute. Now, relative truths are those aspects that we experience in the physical realm, facts and appearances that we take in with our senses that seem true at the time but are not permanent. For example, we're all here today, right? We are all here sitting in the sanctuary of First Unity Church of St. Louis. Is that true? It is relatively true. It is true in the relative. It is not true in the absolute because will we be sitting here tomorrow? Well, if we choose to, we could, right? But that's a point that we can affect and change things in the relative world. It's not true because it won't be true throughout all of eternity, but it's true for the moment. So that's an example of a relative truth. Other relative truths might be how we're dressed, where we live, who our friends are, how hot it is. The weather report is certainly an example of relative truth, especially in St. Louis. It always changes, right? It's always changing. And another point is, I'm going to give you a minute to look at this, beauty is, not beauty, but truth is in the eyes of the beholder. Can you see the slide? One gentleman looks at the rods and says there are three. You look at it a different way, there are four. Okay? I'll let you look at that for a minute. And now as we move to absolute truth is changeless, unlimited, and enduring. As Charles Fillmore writes in The Revealing Word, absolute truth is that which accords with God as divine principle, that which is, has been, and ever will be. Meaning, absolute truth consists of the sum total of all divine ideas and their original purity and power. Divine ideas are the pure ideal good that encompasses the mind of God. Ideas like wholeness and life, love, wisdom, abundance, all the 12 powers, all of those ideas of goodness we call divine ideas. And divine ideas are the fundamental eternal truths that underlie and transcend all physical manifestation. For example, if I had a flower, which I arrived here with a flower, but I guess I don't have it, darn. If I had a flower in my hand, picture this beautiful calla lily that I picked this morning, okay? It's probably on my desk, so picture it. All right, so here's my calla lily. It is relatively true. It's here, right, in our imagination. At any rate, eventually it's going to fade. The leaves are going to drop. In our terminology, it's going to die. However, it represents the divine idea of beauty. Right? And we not only see that lily is beautiful, we can find all sorts of other examples of beauty in our outer world. So, in order to be absolute, it has to be timeless and changeless, not based in time and space, and not based on our outer senses. Okay? All right. Now it's time for a little quiz. I know you all got up this morning and you said, I'm going to get dressed, I'm going to go to church so I can take a test. That's why I'm here. So here we go. Our question is, are these statements relative or are they absolute? Okay, we're going to work through it together, so no pressure. Here we go. The first one, there is only good. What do you think, absolute or relative? Absolute. The reason it's absolute is all else is temporary. There are things in this existence, like the flooding that we had and the tornadoes, that we certainly don't call good, but they are temporary. And goodness comes from them, okay? Second one, the economy is failing. Absolute or relative? Relative, okay? Now, if we say something's relative, then we're called upon to look for the divine idea around it or beneath it or beyond it, okay? So what might be a divine idea around the economy failing? Anybody? I heard it. Good. Abundance. Abundance. Prosperity. Substance. Absolutely. All right, how about I am sick? Okay, now, our bodies can get sick, can they not? Our bodies are from the physical plane. So you're right, it's relative. The divine idea, though, would be what? Wholeness. Absolutely. You all are good. Okay. Last one, there is no death. The hard one, isn't it? I mean, we've all lost people. We've all had people make their transitions. Relative or absolute? Absolute because of what divine idea? Life is eternal, eternal life, okay? So the point is, making the distinction between absolute and relative is not just a little game we're playing here, and it's not an intellectual exercise. Really, it's important that we each analyze how we're identifying life events, especially challenges. And here's the important thing. Any condition in the relative realm has the potential to be healed and transformed. That's the good news. The other news is it takes practice. It takes practice to move from the relative to the absolute. The relative conditions of our lives can seem so real and frightening, can they not? And you know what I mentioned before? They're not illusions. They're real on the relative plane, right? A couple of weeks ago, my husband went to get the mail late on a Friday afternoon after everything was closed. And he brought it in, and it was from the IRS. Had a feeling they weren't writing to tell us they appreciate us being good American citizens, but at any rate, I heard, he's up there, so I can say this, I heard, I won't say what he said, but let's just say, oh, you're not up there, you're back. I guess I better clean up my act, okay? He said, honey, we have bad news. That's not what he said. But at any rate, I came running, and we opened it, and it said that we were owed a lot of money to the IRS. We were like way behind in our taxes. Well, like good students of Unity, we panicked. We're like, where are we going to get this money, you know? But we didn't panic for long, and that's what happens. We relaxed, and we realized it just had to be a mistake. It had to be a mistake. I visualized harmony. I visualized justice. I visualized divine order. And in the end, the IRS had not given us credit for anything that we'd given the whole year. And we're hoping that they will recognize that soon, right? I mean, we're knowing they'll recognize it soon. So the key is, well, let's back up a little bit. I just have to say, things like this are going to happen in the outer. Raise your hand if you've never had a challenge. I mean, it's part of our human condition, isn't it? It is. But those things that happen to us are not, most of them are not the absolute truth. So instead of begging and plea bargaining with a faraway God, we quiet our minds and align with the divine idea that this challenge is calling us to express. This is the very foundation of affirmative prayer, and it's a huge component of the prayer chaplain training. When you pray with someone about a worldly issue, does the person praying with you wring his or her hands and say, oh, you poor dear, this is the worst thing I ever heard. This is horrible. What are we going to do about this? If so, I suggest you switch your prayer partner right away, okay? We don't do that. Instead, we look beyond the appearance to the divine idea. Instead of financial lack, we see what? Abundance or prosperity. Instead of sickness, we see wholeness. Instead of a personal conflict, we see harmony or peace. We do as Myrtle Fillmore taught us. We claim, we praise, and we give glory to what is spiritually true. So what is this key to doing that? It's not easy always. What is the key to looking past the appearance and grabbing hold of the divine idea? Well, I'll give you a clue. Anne talked about it last week. Anybody want to guess what the clue is? Don't feel bad, Anne, if they don't remember. It's okay. Maybe I didn't pose the question right. It is consciousness. Life is consciousness, right? That's what life is. It is the fact that we live in a world of divine ideas. They are like my fish swimming in the koi pond, living in water. We are surrounded and enfolded in one with divine ideas. When we open our minds to the truth that what we see from the bottom floor, if you were here last week, what we see from the bottom floor is not the reality. We need to rise up. We need to claim to come to higher consciousness, and then we draw ourselves to the greatest possible good. It happens all the time. We acknowledge our humanity, and we affirm our divinity. We know that we're more than our bodies. We're more than what happens to us. We are individualized expressions of God, open and receptive to infinite possibilities of good. That's just the way it is. We draw ourselves to that on which we focus. Now, many metaphysicians advocate that on our journey to live in Christ consciousness, it's helpful to consider four phases of awareness or of consciousness. We've talked about these before. There they are, from the bottom floor to the top floor. You can look at them. Paul Hasselbeck writes that understanding these levels helps us realize how we live our lives. And the New Thought minister, Dr. Michael Beckwith, calls these phases evolutionary stages of growth. I like that. He writes that most people are not truly free, but live in reaction to events of the past or present, as well as what they're projecting into the future. And as we move through these four stages, according to Dr. Beckwith, we experience an expanding sense of freedom. So some of you will remember these. We've talked about them before. The first one is victim consciousness. In this stage, I believe that something outside of me controls my destiny. The controlling agent might be God. Some believe it's the devil. It might be our parents, our DNA, some cosmic influence that we can't analyze, or it just might be a fact of time and place, where and when we were born. The point is, this is to me consciousness. I have little control about it. I'm sure people and events are out to get me. My attitude is, the world is against me. Everybody hates me. Nobody loves me. I guess I'll eat a worm. Here we wallow in a sea of self-pity, wasting energy, whining, complaining, blaming, recycling old hurts and grievances. And if we're honest, we've all been there at one time or another. The point is, we're not going to build a condo and live there, okay? We're going to learn to recognize it and move on. Michael Beckwith says, at this stage, we're always pointing our fingers outward, never inward. I take no responsibility for what happened because guess what? It's never my fault. It's never my fault. If you ask people, why did this horrible event happen to you? Some people will say, many people will have a story about it's because of somebody else, his fault, her fault, their fault, not my fault. And when we see ourselves as victims, we attract ourselves to more victimhood. We justify and solidify it. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Energy flows where our attention goes. We've said that before. The good news, the really good news is, once we understand about victim consciousness and once we can recognize it, then we can absolutely change our thinking patterns and move towards self-empowerment, from victim to power. And we can do that with every single event in our lives. Every single event, we can turn that pivotal soul away from the event to the goodness of God, and we're not going to feel like a victim. Stage two is usually called victor consciousness. This is by me awareness. Now, this is a higher level than victim consciousness because here, at least, I believe I have some personal power. So that's good. We're kind of beginning to understand the innate power of the mind, right? For example, I might visualize and manifest a parking space, or I might beat someone in a golf game. Paul looked up at that. Thank you, Paul. However, this is all from my personality. The state of consciousness, this state of consciousness, still contains some victim thinking. Because when we think about it, if there's a victor, there has to be what? There has to be a victim, right? In this stage, I'm just delighted that the victim is not I. I'm happy it's somebody else, right? I am into winning, overpowering, competing, instead of aligning myself with divine ideas of peace and harmony and goodwill, not just for me, but for all humankind. The next level is usually called vessel consciousness. This is when I realize that there is something greater in me. God, Spirit, Divine Mind, the Christ, to identify a few names that we use. Here I see myself as a conduit or vessel of the divine. However, I might, in the words of Eric Butterworth, view the Christ within like a raisin in a bagel. Little bitty piece of me, right? Paul Hasselbeck says, this is a huge step to realize that we are vessels of the divine. It's a huge step, but it is not quite oneness. He gives the example that sound is an expression and effect of playing the piano, but it's not the whole piano. In vessel consciousness, I still have the sense that something is happening to me, so there is still a little piece of victim consciousness. But in victim consciousness, I perceive what happens to me as negative. In this consciousness, I feel God happening to me. So it's a huge leap. Finally, and the stage we're all moving up toward, is what is called verity consciousness. This is the divine as me. The word verity means a principle of irrefutable, enduring truth. In this stage, I realize Christ consciousness. It's what Jesus came to teach. I realize Christ consciousness. I reach my most profound understanding that there's no sense of separation between my human self and my divine self, only oneness. In this stage, I awaken to the Christ, and I behold the Christ in myself and as all others, those people I like, and those people I can't stand, those people I agree with, and those people with whom I do not agree. I live in consciousness of spiritual truth and divine ideas. It is in this state that the truth be known, and importantly, practiced in my life. Paul Hasselbeck writes, moving into verity consciousness happens when you realize there's a higher power, and it is your true reality, your true nature. It is me. How empowering is that? That we always have that power with us. It's not turned on and off. We always have it. So Michael Beckwith actually calls, he has a different name for this stage. He calls it being consciousness. That should say four and not three. Sorry about that. He says it's ironic that when describing the most advanced of the stages, there is the least to say. This is a state of consciousness where human language falls short. We don't have any words to describe it. Beckwith says the line between stages three and four is thin yet extraordinary. In being consciousness, actually spirit as me, there is no longer a dividing line between oneself and source. The living fire of oneness has consumed any residue of separation. Spirit has given us the capacity to have an intimate at-oneness with its presence within ourselves and throughout all creation. So in the end, we have to admit it's really easy to get caught up in day-to-day challenges and sorrows and losses. It's part of our human condition. So I invite us all this week to think about these four stages. They are victim, going up, victim, victor, vessel, and verity. To think about these four stages and analyze where we are. And maybe we bounce around from minute to minute. Sometimes we do. A good way to analyze that is to listen to our self-talk. What am I telling myself about me, and what am I telling myself about this event? We are on this earth to be all that we can imagine God to be, to embrace those divine ideas that are our true spiritual inheritance. In the face of any life crisis, no matter how small or how large, we can turn within to realize the truth, and then we will see a difference in the outer. We call this living from the inside out. When the challenges show up, we realize that in the midst of our being, there is a seed, and the seed is of God, and it is God. We know this seed as the Christ. This seed is our collection of divine ideas. It is the I am of our being, the metaphysical name for our spiritual selves. This is our true identity. Jesus told us, and quoted this last week, and there's every time you walk in the front door, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you what? Free. The truth shall make you free. Our grand purpose on this earth is to wake up to a greater reality than we see in this outer world. Our grand purpose is to express our Christ potential. And if truth be known, every earthly challenge calls us to express more of who and what we are. And so it is. So let's take a moment now as we take all this into prayer and meditation to affirm the great truth about our God. And for those who are visiting for the first time, this is in your bulletin. We'll say it together. Everybody find it? There is only one presence. Okay, together. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.